Joining me now is Julie, a parent in the Seattle area. Julie and I are friends on Facebook, and I saw just an unbelievably scary note, a picture of a Seattle police car. And Julie had to have 8 Seattle cops, I understand, help you rescue your daughter from a homeless shelter?
Yes, a youth homeless shelter in Seattle.
And this is the, is this the Paul G. Allen Hope Center?
Yep, yeah. It is.
So let's talk about quickly how old your daughter is and let's get to the story. But I mean, just to start with this, how old is your daughter?
She's 14 and a half.
Yeah.
She's a freshman in high school.
Yeah. And let's talk through the story of what happened. How did you learn she's at the homeless shelter and what took her there?
Yeah. About 12 days ago, she attempted to run away after a church function. She had told one of her leaders at the church that she was going to kill herself. And so then they said, well, we got to call your mom. So they called me before I even arrived. I got a call that she had run. And when we caught up with her, we had to call the police.
Yeah.
And she did verify to the police officers that she was planning to run away, and she was planning to kill herself. So she was admitted to Seattle Children's. She stayed there overnight. They did a mental health assessment. And then in the morning, they said she doesn't want to come home. And I said, well, why doesn't she come home? Why doesn't she want to come home? And they said, well, she doesn't, it's frustrating because she can't really tell us why she doesn't want to come home. And so the other option is that we could discharge her to a youth shelter in the area if we can find a bed for her. And just for a little background, I have a 17-year-old son who at about the same age had a similar trauma and was released from the ER into a local youth shelter. We had a very good experience there. It was kind of a holding place while he cooled down, and we found a longer-term care solution. He ended up at a wilderness therapy program down in Arizona, which was amazing, life-changing for all of us. So my thought when they said that was, okay, that sounds all right, because that'll give us some time to look around into some options for her. It very quickly, once she got into this youth shelter, I could tell it was a very different kind of shelter. They were not forthcoming with very much information. They were not wanting to allow access to my child. We had a friend who's a Seattle police officer attempt to pay her a visit the next day. And they wouldn't even let him in the front door. I mean, he wasn't there on police business. He was just there as a friend of the family and to check on her. And they wouldn't let him in. Let's see. So then that kind of became, we started having family members called, the siblings called. She has a 25-year-old sister who tried to call, and she wouldn't take any of the calls. And so over the weekend, I spoke with her case manager. And as I was talking to him, I just really got this feeling that they weren't working towards family reunification. And I kept expressing that she has a loving family. We want her to come home. We want reunification. We want to get her the help that she needs. This is a child who has a history of trauma, PTSD. She's, over the last year with COVID, she's definitely suffered from depression. And his answer to me was, well, we really leave that up to the client.
Yeah.
So
for folks who don't know, and Julie's with us, we'll get more to the story and how this came to be 8 police officers to get your daughter back. For folks who don't know the madhouse that is teen mental health in Washington State, number one, once a kid is 13, they control the process entirely.
Yep.
Number two, kids at the age of 13 can decide to go get wrong sex hormones for the asking, and parents will be forced to pay, but they cannot stop it, nor are they told that's going on. Number three, they can do a 72-hour cycle, like at a place called like Children's. After that, a kid can walk out. At 13, they're in charge. But some other things that parents should know. if this was a CPS issue, this would be a must report. So in other words, if your daughter was reporting being harmed in your home, this would be a must report. You'd right. already have had a CPS investigator there. You'd already had a police officer there to take these reports. So this is not a must report circumstance. I can already tell that because we've spent some time around adolescent mental health and family mental health. Mm-hmm. Okay. So you're at this point, this caseworker at the Paul G. Allen Hope Center, doesn't sound like he's working towards family reunification, no information to you or not very much information. And at that point, as a mother, you were feeling what?
I just had a really bad feeling. Just that gut feeling that, you know, as a parent, that something is really wrong here. And so we were already working on finding a solution for her, whether it was, you know, the same wilderness therapy program that we'd done with my son, whether it was a teen program for girls. We knew that she needed care. And we also knew that she did not belong in a homeless shelter. So as the week went on, I would call for, you know, the case manager. I never got calls back. I called 5 days in a row and no one ever called me back. And every time I would call, I was getting more frustrated. Why isn't this person calling me back? And the people on the phone literally laughed at me.
They laughed.
Yeah. Huh. Well, we're just so busy. Huh. And, you know, your child's doing great. She's having so much fun here. I'm like,
it's not a place to have fun. We're talking about someone who said she was going to kill herself.
Right.
And they're laughing in the face of the mother who's seeking information on your beloved daughter.
Exactly. She was missing class all week because we get those auto calls from the schools because her school district is still 100% remote. So she can do all that from the shelter. About midweek, I caught wind that she wanted to change schools.
So you caught wind, you weren't told, you heard.
Yes.
Oh, by the way, your daughter in the Paul G. Allen Hope Center for Youth, funded by the United Way, and we can talk all about the United Way, or at least partially funded by them. I'm certain there's probably City of Seattle stuff in there too. You hear that your daughter wants to switch schools.
Correct.
Wow.
And I also heard through many sources that the social worker was working with her to get an attorney.
Oh. So
that she could apply for, I think it's CHINS, Child in Need of Services, which basically takes the parent out of the equation.
This is a precursor to the social worker and state stepping in to seize control over the child's decision-making. Again, note, this is not a CPS issue. Right. Note, I just ask you, is there abuse at your home? Are there beatings? Is there sexual abuse at your home?
Nope. And just to note, this child has been in the ER 3 times in the last 12 days. So you would think if there was an issue, yeah, CPS would be at our door.
And I would guess, and that because of I've spent so much time around youth mental health, particularly in these days, I would guess cutting, self-harm, intent to harm, issues like this. And again, in an ER circumstance, suspicion of parental abuse is a must report. And that's never happened in your case. You've never had CPS over. All right.
No.
So you hear that she wants to switch schools. You hear that the social worker is bringing in an attorney to effectively seize control over your daughter's decision-making and to cut the parents out. And I can imagine how you felt. I would have felt insanely angry and frightened. And how did you and your husband feel?
Insanely angry and frightened. Yeah. I confronted the social worker on the phone on Friday. And I said, look, this is what I heard that you're trying to help her find an attorney. You want to change schools. Look, we want our daughter back. We want to get her the help that she needs. Not 2 hours later, she had texted a friend through some app through, they give these kids computers. Yeah. So she's still online,
but not for school,
not for school. So she's communicating and she said, my social worker just told me that my mom is trying to pull consent. I've got to get an attorney as soon as possible.
All right. Let's continue this. We're going to check traffic at the Right Way Traffic. We'll continue the conversation with Julie, a mother in the Seattle area who required 8 cops to rescue her daughter from the Paul G. Allen Hope Center for Youth. We'll check traffic at the Right Way Traffic. Julie's with us. She's a mother in the Seattle area. We've got about 10 minutes left. An astonishing story, unless you've spent time around teen mental health in Washington State. This is the madhouse. This is what happens when kids run things. When we were recapping this, Julie just learned that the apparent, according to Julie, the social worker was seeking a lawyer basically to give her 14-year-old daughter autonomy. And she, your daughter, was communicating with a friend saying, oh, look, my social worker says I'm a lawyer up. My mom's trying to pull consent. At this point, you had to be utterly panicked.
I was. I knew that the clock was ticking. So being that it was Friday, I was, when you hear this, you don't expect it, right? Cause you know, your 14-year-old doesn't know phrases like pull consent and I need an attorney, and they don't know these kinds of things. So I was, you know, it shocks you. You're kind of in a state of shock, and what do I do? What do I need to do? So Saturday, I learned from a pastor that she was communicating with that the shelter on Friday had given her a razor.
And they had given a suicidal girl who'd been in the ER 3 times in the past couple of weeks a razor. You don't even give kids in treatment centers belts or shoelaces. Wow. Yeah. A razor. Okay.
So you can guess what she did with the razor.
She self-harmed in this center.
Self-harmed.
So in the Paul G. Allen Hope Center for Youth, she was given a razor, and you're saying she self-harmed in this center.
In the center.
And these are the people who wanted to seize control of your daughter and give her a lawyer.
Correct.
Okay. So you learned about this through this pastor. Unbelievable. So this is the weekend. Now you have to be utterly panicked.
I am. So it's Saturday night. So the youth pastor says to me, she's like, Julie, I got to call the shelter. I'm like, yes, you do. And so she called the shelter. 3 hours after she called the shelter called me to let me know that they had called 911 and that they were taking my child to the emergency room because she had been self-harming. She had been cutting. And I said, well, how did you find out? And they said, well, she told us. And I said, really? She told you? Well, and her pastor called.
Oh, and her pastor
and called. Her pastor called.
So the pastor. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. But they weren't going to tell me that. They were going to make it, you know. So I said, well, where did she cut herself? Well, we don't know. You called 911, but you don't know where she cut herself. How did you do an assessment? Well, we did a verbal assessment.
If I hadn't talked to hundreds of parents, Julie, this would shock me. I feel awful for you. I feel sad and I feel worried for your family. And I'm looking at a mom who's a warrior and a family who's fighting for their kid. Listen, in a decent shelter, you do a body check because the kid could have seriously harmed themselves. So they don't even do this. So did they get her to the emergency room?
They did get her to the emergency room. She was discharged, I think about 3 hours later without my consent.
Without your consent.
Without my consent back to the shelter.
Unbelievable. Unbelievable. Julie's with us. She's a parent in the Seattle area. This battle to get her kid back from a homeless shelter that, according to Julie, availed her suicidal daughter of a razor with which, according to Julie, she cut herself. So at what point did you somehow convince the police to go intervene in this? And how did you do that?
Yeah. So on Monday, she was scheduled to go have lunch with a friend of ours. And Monday morning, the shelter called me and said, she's not feeling well, so she needs to cancel her lunch plans. And I said, okay, well, that's really concerning to me that she was just released from the ER yesterday. And this morning she's not feeling well. And so I think it's time that we have our family doctor take a look at her. And so I'm going to make her an appointment today and I will call you back and let you know what time that appointment is so that she can be ready. So we arranged for this friend to pick her up at 2:30 to take her to her appointment in Bellevue at 3 o'clock. She showed up. I made sure she had power of attorney in case there were any issues when she showed up there. And they would not let her see my daughter. They would not even let her in the room, into the shelter. And so we knew at that point that there was trouble. And so I was actually nearby in my own car. So we called my husband to come in and join us. And we called a friend who is a police officer and said, here's what's going on. We have to get her out of there today. What do we do? And they said, call 911. And so that's when we called 911. Two officers showed up. They were amazingly supportive. They went up to the shelter. Gosh, it seemed like they were up there talking to them for almost an hour. And they came back and they were baffled. And they said, these people are just running interference. We can't ask your daughter questions without them answering for her.
They would not let police officers interact with the child without intervening themselves.
Correct.
At the Paul G. Allen Hope Center for Youth in Seattle.
Yep.
Wow.
And so basically they came out to us and said, we pretty much have a hostage situation here. They won't let you have your daughter. Which is when backup came and more backup came. I mean, just cars, you know, it was like every 10 minutes, more cars were coming because there just weren't enough people.
And I presume this picture on your Facebook page is a picture of one of those Seattle police cars.
Yeah.
So eventually there are 8 officers on the scene at the Paul G. Allen Hope Center for Youth. And was it, I mean, eventually you got your daughter back, but how did it happen? We've got like, you know, 4 minutes left in this incredible story.
Yeah. And I don't, you know, I we're still kind of in crisis mode right now because we don't have her where we need her. So they finally did get her out of the shelter. She was twitching terribly and convulsing. It was very apparent to everyone that she was on drugs. I have never seen my child like that. It was terrifying. The screaming, the bloodshot eyes, cussing at us, cussing at the cops, kicking. And finally I had to tell them, you know, because she was going to hurt them. Yeah. She was a risk to them. And so I said, you know, you need to cuff her for your own safety, for everybody's safety.
Yeah.
And at that point we had eventually 4 hours later, after this all started, we had to have her taken by AMR to Children's, which is where she is currently.
Wow.
And we are working to transport her to a hospital in Idaho.
Yeah. Wow. Julie, you know, I talk a lot about faith on the show. And I will just ask my audience to pray for you.
Thank you.
And pray for your daughter. We don't need to say your daughter's name on the air. I've seen circumstances like this, and the fear that engulfs a parent is one thing, but being unable to trust a caregiver, to being unable to trust someone who works in a youth shelter to not hand a suicidal child a razor or your assessment that your daughter was on drugs. Out of all this experience, as you're still in this battle, I would render a guess that that's the thing that might stick with you is the inability to trust a caregiver.
Yeah. And, you know, right before you and I got on here, I received a call from an attorney for her while she's in the hospital saying she's not going to Idaho.
Wow.
Yeah.
So now they have gotten your 14-year-old daughter an attorney.
Yep.
and they intend to keep her from going to the place where you're seeking care for her.
That's correct.
All right. Julie, this is, look, I've been telling people for a long time, I don't think their kids are safe in the government schools.
Nope.
And I've been telling people for a long time, I think there's a spiritual portion of this or a spiritual piece of this.
Absolutely.
Kids have been so harmed. Yes. Yeah, the lockdown.
Yep.
And the perverse pornographic sex ed in the schools and the critical race theory and the hating of oneself and the hating of fellow students. So I want to stay in touch with you, whether it's on the radio or on the side. I want to be a support to the degree I can.
Thank you.
And you've done a lot to share what you've been through. Julie's been with us. She's a parent in the Seattle area. I would appreciate right now if you would, during this break, just drop in prayer to God Almighty that Julie and the Holy Spirit be with their family and with this girl, and that the parents get to be the parents.
Yeah.
It's Todd Herman Show. We'll continue.